This is Wendy Bauer returning with a Decatur Herald and Review for October 26th, 2015. We will continue now with the obituaries. Niona D. Castle, Decatur. Niona D. Castle, 86, of Decatur, passed away Friday, October 23rd, 2015, in St. Mary's Hospital. A graveside service to celebrate Niona's life will be at 2 p.m. Monday, October 26, 2015, in Fairlawn Cemetery. Patricia Ann Ewald, Decatur. Patricia Ann Ewald, 80, of Decatur, passed away Friday, October 23, 2015, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Mass of Christian burial to celebrate Pat's life will be at 10 o'clock a.m. Wednesday, October 28, 2015, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 o'clock p.m. Tuesday, October 27, 2015, at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home, with a vigil prayer service at 4:30 p.m. Memorial will be at Boiling Springs Cemetery in Decatur. Memorials may be made to SMILE, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, or Decatur Christian School. Michael A. Moore, Decatur. Michael A. Moore, 61, of Decatur, passed away Wednesday, October 21, 2015, in St. Mary's Hospital, surrounded by his family. Visitation will be 6 to 8 o'clock p.m., Thursday, October 29, 2015, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Family will host a graveside service at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 31, 2015, in Findlay Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the family. Robert Lee Odell, Decatur. Robert Lee Odell, 78, of Decatur, passed away Wednesday, October 21, 2015, in Symphony of Decatur. Graveside services to celebrate Robert's life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 28, 2015. Robert Bob Earl Sinclair of Windsor. Robert Bob Earl Sinclair, 78, of Windsor, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, October 24, 2015, at Carl Foundation Hospital. A service celebrating Mr. Sinclair's life and legacy at Windsor Christian Church will be held on Tuesday, October 27, 2015, at 11 o'clock a.m. Visitation will be 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. on Monday, October 26, 2015, at Windsor Christian Church. Memorials can be made to Windsor Christian Church or to the Christian Campus Fellowship at Eastern Illinois University. Charles Bobby Long, Jr. Charles Bobby Long, Jr., age 22, passed away on July 12, 2015, in Kent, Washington. A celebration of life dinner will be held on November 7th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Port Royal Gastropub, located at 2880 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur, Illinois. Samuel Sam Milosevic. Sam Milosevic, age 91, late of Romeoville, Illinois, and formerly of Decatur, Illinois, and Auburndale, Florida, passed away peacefully at home Friday, October 2, 2015. Cremation rites have been accorded, and a memorial gathering for both Samuel and his wife Elizabeth has been scheduled for Saturday, November 14, 2015, at 1 o'clock p.m., at First Presbyterian Church, 805 Western Avenue, Joliet, Illinois. Interment will be in Maple Hill Cemetery, Fairfield, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Joliet Area Community Hospice, 250 Waterstone Circle, Joliet, Illinois, 60431. James Puckett, Pena. James Puckett, 79, of Pena, died Thursday, October 22, 2015, in his residence. Memorials may be made to Pana Eagles Lodge, 186 U.S. Highway 51, Pana, Illinois, 62557. Cremation rites were accorded and no services are planned.
Nova Jean York, Decatur. Nova Jean York, 84, of Decatur, passed away.
Nova Jean York, of Decatur. Nova Jean York, 84, of Decatur, passed away at 4:15 a.m. Friday, October 23rd, 2015, in Fairhaven's Christian Home. Private burial will be in Point Pleasant Cemetery, Long Creek. Bobby J. Farmer, Decatur. Bobby J. Farmer, 69, of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, October 20th, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Homegoing service to celebrate Bobby's life will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, October 27th, 2015, in Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery. Kenneth Franklin Hopkins, Shelbyville. Kenneth Franklin Hopkins, 62, of Shelbyville, passed away Thursday, October 22nd, 2015, at 7:42 a.m. at his home. A memorial service will be at 6 o'clock p.m., Monday, October 26th, 2015, at Lockhart Green Funeral Home, Shelbyville. Kenna Ray Mars, Shelbyville. Kenna Ray Mars, 70, of Springfield, Illinois, formerly of Shelbyville, Illinois, passed away at 3:33 p.m. Thursday, October 22nd, 2015, in St. John's Hospital, Springfield, Illinois. Funeral services will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015, in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 o'clock p.m. Tuesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Tower Hill Cemetery, Tower Hill, Illinois. Memorials may be given to the family. Casual attire is requested. Robert Jr. Mills of Dallas, North Carolina. Robert Jr. Mills, 92, of Dallas, North Carolina, passed away October 15th, 2015 at Bel Air Healthcare in Gastonia, North Carolina. A celebration of life service was held Monday, October 19, 2015 in Gastonia, North Carolina. Memorial services will be held on Saturday, October 24, 2015 at the Cisco United Methodist Church. Dolores Ann Tucker, Long Creek. Dolores Ann Lori Tucker, 77, of Long Creek, Illinois, passed away at 3:10 p.m. Thursday, October 22, 2015, in her residence. A graveside service to celebrate Lori's life will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Monday, October 26, 2015, in Point Pleasant Cemetery, Long Creek. Memorials may be made to the Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois Charitable Fund. And now, further news from the Decatur Herald and Review. From Shelbyville, missing hunter found dead in creek. The Shelby County dive team recovered the body of a missing man, Jason Navis, 32, at 12:45 p.m. Sunday, southeast of Shelbyville, according to a news release from the Shelby County Sheriff's Office. He was found in a water-filled, spring-fed creek on the property he went missing on, not far from the deer stand he was last known to be walking to when reported missing by his family at approximately 6 p.m. Saturday, authorities said. Further information was not available as of Sunday evening. From Decatur, shooting death may be accidental. Police say a Decatur man's death from a gunshot wound Saturday night appears to be an accident. The 34-year-old's body was found at a house in the 100 block of South Calhoun Street. Detectives say it looks like he had picked up a loaded handgun to do some repair work and had tripped going downstairs, shooting himself below the left armpit. Investigations into the circumstances of the shooting are continuing, and police also say the victim was not licensed to possess a firearm. Further police news from Decatur. Huey Freeman, staff writer, writes, "Police raid finds guns, drugs, cash." When Decatur Police Department street crimes detectives raided the barricaded east side residence of a 32-year-old man who was out on bond in a drug possession case, they found a loaded rifle as well as a drug stash with a total street value of about $30,000. David L. Coleman is being held in jail on preliminary charges including armed violence, manufacturing delivery of cocaine and heroin, possession of a firearm by a felon, and criminal fortification of a residence, said a news release by Police Detective Lieutenant Shannon Gutierrez Seal. At 8:35 p.m. Thursday, detectives assisted by the police department's emergency response team executed a knock search warrant at an apartment in the 2700 block of Jamar Trail. As officers attempted to enter the residence, they encountered a barricade consisting of a metal pole bracing between the floor and door. Coleman was alone in the apartment, apparently engaged in playing a video game in the bedroom at the time the officers began to make their entry, said an affidavit by Police Detective Jason Hesse. Two bags of heroin containing about 3 ounces were found in a kitchen cabinet, along with several bags containing a total of about 4 ounces of cocaine. In the bedroom, officers found about 4 ounces of marijuana in bags in a coffee can, as well as a digital scale. A .22 caliber rifle was found in a case beneath the bathroom sink. A total of $1,042 in cash was found in Coleman's possession, as well as within the apartment. Coleman, who served prior prison terms for drug possession convictions in 2002 and 2008, is being held in the Macon County Jail on $400,000 bond. He is due in court for his arraignment in his most recent case by Friday. And a story out of Shelbyville by Sharon Barraclough for the Herald and Review. Shelbyville Solar Farm starts work. More than 100 people, including Shelbyville High School environmental biology students, were in the audience Monday morning for the official opening of the Shelby Solar Farm just east of the Lake Shelbyville Dam. The $1.6 million 500 kilowatt 4-acre site features 2,052 solar panels that can provide power for up to 120 homes built by Prairie Power, Inc., a transmission cooperative based in Springfield. Interim President CEO Dan Braden said the cooperative added solar power to their coal, natural gas, and wind-based power sources because members asked for it. "Our member owners are interested in clean, renewable energy," he said. "Also, as a member-owned cooperative, we continue to look for ways to diversify our power portfolio, which has the potential to reduce risks and costs over the long term." Braden said a solar farm was a more cost-effective for consumers, as opposed to individual solar panels on homes. "While a homeowner's solar panel can provide some of their own solar power, it's an expensive project that requires technology and maintenance and can affect a home's resale value," he said. "Members who want to use solar as a renewable energy option will also have the opportunity to pay a one-time fee for a solar panel and then receive a monthly credit for their bill." Shelby Electric Cooperative serves the area where the solar farm is located. Chief Executive Officer Josh Schallenberger said rural power users are interested in alternative energy. "Just as farming has changed and expanded with larger equipment and more efficient ways of getting the most from the surface area, solar power has changed and expanded with new technology that provides affordable, renewable energy. Our members get it and want to be part of the future of the energy industry." As students walked among the solar panels, Braden was eager to answer questions about solar power. "This is their future," he said. "These are the people who will take alternative energy to the next level. It's an exciting time." And from Normal, Julia Evelsizer, Lee News Service writer, brings an article, Band Contest Draws 45 Groups. When his alarm clock went off at 3 a.m. Saturday, Ethan Thomas wasn't tempted to hit the snooze button. The senior at University High School was ready for his last marching band competition despite the early call time and chilly weather. We had to be on the field for warm-ups at 5:44 a.m. and our performance was at 7 a.m., said Thomas, who plays tenor drums. The U High Marching Pioneers were among 45 high school bands competing in the State of Illinois Marching Band Championship at Illinois State University's Hancock Stadium. Other Bloomington area marching bands were from Eureka, Pontiac, Olympia, Prairie Central, Lincoln, Streeter, Normal West Community, Bloomington, and Normal Community High Schools. At 7 a.m., as the temperature hit 31 degrees, Thomas and his 87 bandmates had layers of clothes under their uniforms. The show was titled Dark Side of the Moon. "It's tough because our instruments can go out of tune from the cold," he said. "The best feeling is walking off the field. There is this post-performance thrill, and we're all talking about how we did." K.C. DeCremer, a U High sophomore and clarinet player, said the social aspect of marching is her favorite part of being in band. "We have this big sense of family and community," she said. "We're a really tight-knit group." Many students and spectators milled around the stadium wrapped in blankets, scarves, and hats. The 140 members of Normal West Marching Band didn't have to start quite as early in the day and were just as prepared for their show, Shadows. "They did a really nice job," said director Ryan Budzinski after the students exited the field. "They've had a strong week and they've been working hard. It's been a culmination of efforts." The Normal West Band played at the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis on Friday as part of a two-day marching band competition. "This is my 18th year at ISU Band Day since I was a performer myself," said Budzinski. "You always see this camaraderie between groups. There are some bands as small as 35 members and some as big as 285 members, but they're all here doing the same thing." Awards were announced throughout the day, ending late in the evening with a final championship competition. The competition at ISU marks the end of marching band season for many schools. Two of the Normal West senior drum majors, Jacob Labertue and Kamal Manla, said the final performance was bittersweet. "It's sad, but it's been so great," said Manla. "None of my friends who aren't in marching band can say they've had the same experiences as me. It hasn't really hit me that it's over yet," added Labertue. And Emily Steele writes a feature article from Decatur, CPR Machine Gives EMTs a Hand. Begins with a photograph. Paramedics Alan Malberger and James Clark demonstrate the use of a Lucas CPR device. They have what appears to be a dummy on a gurney, and they are applying the technology. From Decatur, "Doing CPR during a medical emergency is difficult. A lot of force and speed is needed to keep blood flowing through the body when the heart quits. After 2 minutes, even the most fit rescuer's depth and pace of chest compressions starts to decrease. CPR is a very physically taxing procedure," Decatur Ambulance Service CEO David Burkham said. "Not to mention, it can be difficult or impossible to complete if patients need to be moved in tight areas or up and down stairs. But the ambulance service just got in 6 new additions this week for which that isn't an issue. The Lucas chest compression system provides automated CPR at the touch of a button." Burkham said he's had his eye on the devices for several years, but the first models of the devices were powered with compressed air and there was no room in the ambulances for air tanks. When the next model came out with a battery, Burkham bought 6, one for each paramedic ambulance. "Each team of paramedics can deliver CPR multiple times or never, depending on the day. We've deployed it on 1 or 2 patients," paramedic James Clark said. "The paramedics will still deliver standard CPR for younger children and while the machine is being set up. The device breaks into two pieces. A back plate slides under the patient, and the suction cup compressor snaps in place above. After paramedics select the correct mode, the machine can start delivering 2-inch deep chest compressions with an enlarged suction cup while the paramedics give rescue breaths or oxygen. "The thing is ingenious," paramedic Alan Malberger said. "It's one less thing you have to worry about." The 17-pound device is stored in a backpack in the ambulance. Its battery lasts an hour, and when a patient arrives at the ER, the machine can be connected to an external power source to continue CPR as long as necessary. Malberger said the automated CPR allows paramedics to complete other crucial tasks and removes an element of liability since the compressions are delivered at the perfect depth and speed. A downside is the cost. At $15,000 apiece, emergency responders in rural areas may not be able to afford the devices. "It's a good investment in the patients and community," Burkham said. "We're doing our part to make this a heart-safe community." And we will now read from the Decatur Tribune Online. Article from the City Beat by Paul Osborne, "Neighborhood Wins Battle Against Rezoning for New Aldi Store." A request to rezone parcels at the intersection of Ash Avenue and US 51 to facilitate the development of a new Aldi grocery store was denied by a vote of 4-3 by the Decatur City Council Monday night. Neighbors of the proposed area have been strong in their opposition to rezoning, contending that locating an Aldi's store at that location would cause more traffic congestion and create safety issues. They turned out big time for the Monday night meeting, which was held in the Civic Center due to the anticipated size of the crowd. After many comments were made, mostly against rezoning, council members Jerry Dawson, Bill Faber, Lisa Gregory, and Pat McDaniel voted against rezoning, with Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and council members Chris Funk and Dana Ray voting for it. Last week in this column, I wrote that if the vote was held at that time, rezoning would lose by a 4-3 vote. I knew that Dawson, Faber, and McDaniel would vote against it, and felt that Dana Ray's vote could go either way. As it turned out, the fourth vote came from someone that many people expected to vote for the rezoning, Lisa Gregory. Although she kept quiet about her vote, it was rumored late last week that she had indicated to some homeowners of the area that she would not vote for rezoning. There were a lot of rumors floating around over the many weeks this issue has been the hot topic in Decatur. However, it doesn't make much difference now. Gregory voted against it and actually became the unexpected tiebreaker in the 4-3 vote to reject rezoning for the site. The question now is, will Aldi's find another site in Decatur, move to Forsyth, or simply stay and expand where the store is located on Pershing Road? And also from the Decatur Tribune Online, Richland Community College President Dr. Gail Saunders to retire. From Decatur, Dr. Gail Saunders, president of Richland Community College, and Bruce Campbell, chairman of the Board of Trustees, announced the retirement of Dr. Saunders. When Gail became president of Richland Community College in 2001, the board never dreamed she would remain at the helm for 15 years, said Campbell. Scheduled to retire in spring 2016, she has left an indelible mark on the college. Her commitment and contributions to Richland, the students, and the communities we serve have been immeasurable. I feel blessed to have had the privilege to serve Richland for 15 years and to have been surrounded by a talented team who will work diligently every day to turn the vision of Richland Community College into a reality, said Dr. Gail Saunders, president of Richland Community College. In August 2001, Dr. Gail Saunders became the sixth president to lead Richland Community College. Upon retirement, she will have more than 40 years of experience as an administrator in higher education. The past 33 years, she spent specifically in Illinois Community College administration. The framework for the future successes of Richland Community College was set in 2002 when President Saunders elected the Academic Quality Improvement Program as a pathway for reaccreditation. This accreditation model is premised on principles of continuous quality improvement, and its various processes and requirements are designed to assist institutions of higher education in achieving quality improvement, along with reaffirming the institution's accredited status. It was this distinct decision that served to transform and strengthen the college's quality culture in the delivery and growth of educational offerings. Under her visionary leadership, the physical footprint of Richland Community College has seen the addition of the Scherer Industrial Technology Center in 2002, Schrote Health Education Center in 2003, Duane O. Andreas Agribusiness Education Center in 2006, Adele P. Glenn Early Childhood Education Center in 2007, Center for Sustainability and Innovation in 2008, Mathematics Enrichment Center in 2010, National Sequestration Education Center in 2011, Workforce Development Institute 2013, and the relocation of the Heartland Technical Academy, formerly the Decatur Area Technical Academy, to the Richland campus in 2014. For the addition of each new facility or expanded space, Dr. Saunders' focus on student achievement has been the driving champion for new or enhanced educational opportunities that would benefit students while serving the needs of the community. The college has seen curriculum additions in the areas of culinary arts, auto collision repair, diesel, medium, and heavy truck technology, supply chain management, healthcare documentation, sign language, commercial drivers, tanker vehicle training, engineering with an emphasis in carbon capture, utilization, and storage, and robotic welding, just to name a few. Under Dr. Saunders' presidency, Decatur was chosen in 2004 as one of the permanent sites for the Farm Progress Show. The tremendous success of this event led Penton, parent company of Farm Progress Show, to make a $1 million investment for the expansion of Progress City USA through the addition and development of 13 acres, increasing the site from 80 acres to a 93-acre outdoor convention center. This past September marked the 10th anniversary of the Farm Progress Show being held on the campus of Richland Community College. The Richland Community College Foundation has flourished under her leadership and is ranked among the top community college foundations in the nation. In June 2010, the foundation announced it had reached its major gifts campaign goal of $17 million 2 years ahead of schedule. The impact of the foundation is best reflected at the local level by the hundreds of student scholarships it provides, representing over $750,000 in scholarship support annually. Dr. Saunders' passion for quality education has been proven through her efforts in the national arena with the Continuous Quality Improvement Network, Executive Secretary and Treasurer, American Association of Community Colleges Commission on Economic Development and Workforce Training, as well as the President's Academy Executive Committee, Commission on Global Education through the American Association of Community Colleges, and the American Association of Community College Trustees President's Advisory Committee. Dr. Saunders is a recipient of several awards for her leadership and community involvement, including the Athena Award, YWCA Woman of the Year Award, Salute Honoree for Partners in Education, Illinois Community College Trustees Association Advocacy Award, and the Herald and Review's 20 Over 50 Making a Difference in Our Community. This has been Wendy Bauer reading to you from the Decatur Herald and Review and the Decatur Tribune Online on October 26th, 2015. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.